Hi.
Hello again.
Great. Thanks, Lauren and Elizabeth. Appreciate the invitation and the introduction, and really happy to be here all with all of you tonight. And I will say I'm excited and happy to be here with you. And my commitment is at the level that I'm willing to not watch my Lakers right now, just to be here with you all tonight. So know that that's real commitment. But no, I am happy to participate in this, and I think always happy to talk to juniors and their families. I think it's a great time to really kind of start to dive deep into the college admission process and understand what you're looking for and how really is the best way to approach this process. So I will certainly share my remarks and give an overview and a bit of my insights as to how I think you might begin and think about this process. You know, you can take that for what it's worth, but I think what I hope to do through my comments is to ease some concerns, to ease some anxieties, to let you know that it's all going to be okay and it's going to be okay. excuse me, but really to save time for the end of this, where we can really get into some questions and answers, and I can talk specifically about the things that you all would like to hear more about. So let me start with a little bit of my background, because I always think the perspective of the person presenting is important to understand the lens through which we see this through. So, you know, as Lauren mentioned, I grew up in Virginia. I went to a place called Christopher Newport University, which is a public university in Virginia. I was the first person in my family to earn a college degree. And so I kind of lucked into the right place. You know, I went to a big public school. My counselor, I met once, and it wasn't very memorable for either of us. And ultimately just went to a school about a half hour away from where we lived, that turned out to be the perfect place for me. It was exactly what I needed. I was, you know, somebody who was able to really lead and engage and be active in a way that I really needed to grow as an individual, and learned a lot. So it, you know, that really impacts my lens and perspective on the work that we do. And I really loved talking about the college process even when I was in college, because I think I stumbled into the right thing, but I wanted to demystify and help prospective students and families to not stumble into things, to really make educated and informed decisions about, you know, where they might spend their undergraduate experience. So, you know, I was able to work at some of the institutions that Lauren shared, and I think each of those are very different from each other. William & Mary, you know, second oldest institution in the country, public university in Virginia. Pitzer, you know, small liberal arts college with a very distinct kind of social justice focus mission. USC, large, very well-known private research university, and then certainly UCLA, a leading public research university. So I think that's something that those different things have really helped me to understand the admission work that we do from a number of different perspectives. I really wish I could turn off that notification, because every time that beeps, it bugs me. let me talk first and foremost about kind of the overall process. How do we go about college admission? How do we make admission decisions? And the first and foremost response to any question, and the thing that's going to color a lot of what I say, is it depends. There is no uniform, monolithic way in which we approach college admission, you know, at colleges and universities. There are certainly some similarities, but there are definitely some differences as well. And I'll try and articulate those as much as I can as I talk through this process. But let me first talk about just some of the fundamentals of the college search process. And I'll start by saying that while we are in a time that is, you know, what's the word, unprecedented, that we've used repeatedly and we've heard repeatedly about the times that we're in. But I think there is a very thin silver lining to some of what we've experienced in the last several months. And that is really associated with the college visit. And how do you really engage with and get to know colleges and universities now as somebody who's starting in your junior year? The opportunities to engage with college and universities in a virtual sense now is vastly different than it was even 6 months ago. I think we all have been forced to be in a position to really step up our virtual engagement efforts in a way that, you know, short of a pandemic like we've experienced, we probably wouldn't have done, certainly not in the timeline that we have. So whether it's a live guided tour that's through something like Zoom or a virtual platform. Those exist now in a way that they didn't before. Opportunities to engage with admission staff, either one-on-one or through a virtual visit or an admission presentation, those exist now in a way that they didn't. Many colleges and universities even offer opportunities to sit in on virtual classes. You know, colleges that do interviews, mine does not, but colleges that offer interviews are often offering those interviews online through a platform like this as well. And I say all of that to say that I think traditionally the college search, in many ways, you know, we always as college folks want to see you on our college campuses. And I look forward to the day when we can get back to welcoming people to our campus and doing those live interactions. But in lieu of that, this is a time where you really have a chance to engage with colleges and universities without any restriction related to geography. You know, I know not everybody can get on an airplane and fly wherever they want to visit a college, but you traditionally, generally can engage in this way. And so I would say, as you start to build that list, as you start to think about colleges and universities that you might consider, take advantage of this. You know, take advantage of these opportunities that colleges are offering to really engage with us virtually. And while it may not fully replace that on-campus in-person experience, it's a pretty good proxy for it. And I think that, you know, again, with current students, with admission staff, sometimes with faculty, like, take advantage of those opportunities. Because the other point that I'll make, and I'll probably repeat this, is I think the important thing you need to think about now is to really be very broad and think about having a really strong college list. Because I think an enormous amount of the stress in this process, and I can't sit here and tell you that we can take all the stress out of the college search process, but there are things that you can do to significantly reduce the amount of stress that you might experience. And that is to really think of a college list with the help of your counselors, because these are folks that you can trust, they know their stuff, they know colleges, you know, they know you, they will get to know you, and that's gonna be what helps them to find that match between what you're looking for and the types of colleges and universities that might offer that experience. Take advantage of that expertise and really think broadly and start to build that list of places that some might be highly selective and really tough to get into. Some might be less selective in places where you and your counselors feel really confident that you have a good chance of being admitted. If you can have a list that really incorporates certainly the latter of those two things, then you really take an enormous amount of stress out of this process, because then you're really taking control. You're saying, you know, I feel confident that I have a handful of schools on this list where me and my counselors really feel like I'll be a good fit, I've got a really good chance of being admitted, and I have a great experience. Because I think sometimes in the college search, the thing that students often will lose sight of, and parents are guilty of this too, is thinking too much of that, the name on the top of the diploma, the name of the institution, and thinking that that's going to be the thing that makes the difference. And I'm not going to sit here and say it doesn't matter at all, but I think sometimes we don't remember the name in the middle of the diploma and the role that the student and the individual plays in making that experience great. You know, and I think, you know, I've said this in other forums, that there are plenty of perfectly miserable students on highly selective college campuses. And the reason for that is because they've made the choice to enroll at that school or apply to that institution because of the name and the prestige and the reputation. And they stop there. And I'm not trying to say that those things don't matter. You shouldn't consider it at all. Absolutely. I get that and I understand that. But I think you have to understand what the experience is going to be like to see if it's a place where you're really going to be happy and you're really going to enjoy the experience and you're going to get a lot out of it. Because if you go to a college and you don't engage in the way that you do probably in the community that you have at Urban, like, you're not going to get everything out of that experience. So I think building a strong foundational college list is the thing that is probably more important than anything else, because that allows you to really seize control of the process. But once you start to really distill that list and you decide what are the types of institutions that I think I might want to apply to, then the question is, how are these colleges evaluating applications and making admission decisions? What are they looking at, and what are the things that really might factor into those decisions? You know, certainly of no surprise, we're very interested in academic performance across the board, big, small. You know, colleges are certainly interested in that foundation that academic foundation to who you are as a student. So we're going to understand the type of curriculum you've taken in high school, the type of grades that you've earned in those classes, and the degree to which you've really been successful and performed at a high level in that context. And this is where that word that I just said matters a lot, and that is context. You know, and even at a place like mine, and last year we received just under 110,000 freshman applications for admission. Even at a large institution like mine, we consider context. Every application at UCLA is read at least twice before a decision is made. And I mean read. We're not cutting corners. We're reading all the essays, personal insight questions, activities, leadership, involvement, you know, academic performance. All of those things matter and are considered in the process. But context is important because we understand that high schools are very different. Not all schools are the same. Not all schools offer the same kind of curriculum. And schools have often maybe restrictions even on the types of classes and things that students can take. So colleges and universities are going to seek to understand the institution from which you're applying to be able to assess the degree to which what kind of curriculum is available to the student and have they taken advantage of those rigorous courses. There are some places where a 3.8 GPA, you know, 3.8 unweighted GPA might put you in the top 10% of the graduating class. There are other places where it might put you in the fourth decile of a graduating class. What we want to understand is not to just look at that number as a number, but to say within the context of what's available to the student in that school, how have they performed and to what degree have they taken advantage of the rigorous courses available to them. So we spend a lot of time getting to know high schools and understanding that context so that when we're evaluating students, we're doing it appropriately. You know, and I think I say that certainly as somebody from UC, where I think the perception is often, well, I could go to this public school and get a 4.8 GPA, and I'm going to have a better chance of being admitted. And that's not the case. What we're doing is we're looking at that 4.8 in the context of that school, and that might not be a top performing GPA in that school, as hard as that might be to believe. So I think what we're doing is looking to really understand you in the context of your school, and that plays a big role in how we evaluate your academic performance. Involvement outside of class really matters too. And this is something that I think there's often the perception that colleges and universities are looking for well-rounded students. So you've heard this expression, colleges want to see well-rounded students. Well, sure, we certainly don't have anything against well-rounded students. But there's also a place at my college and every university that I've worked for the perfectly lopsided student. And what I mean by that is not every student has to do a little bit of everything. Some students have one particular focus or passion or interest, and they really demonstrate to us in the application the degree to which they've committed themselves to whatever that thing may be. You know, and it could be lots of things. Maybe it's research, maybe it's you're active in service or a sport, or you work part-time and you're saving money for your family, or, you know, whatever the case may be. Like, we want to know what are the things that you really care about and how do you demonstrate that commitment in what you do outside of the classroom? Because when we bring students onto our college campuses, we want students who are going to be active and engaged both in and outside of the classroom. And so we can't discern that just from a GPA. We can't discern that just from classes. We need to understand, what do you do when you're not engaged in the academic work that you're doing? What kind of citizen, what kind of roommate, what kind of member of the community are you going to be on a college campus? And so that's why we ask you to tell us about those things in the process. And so what I would tell you, especially as a student starting your junior year, continue to pour yourself into the things that you care about. Don't feel this unnecessary need to get involved in things that you don't really care about because you think a college admission office wants to see that. You know, students who like, all right, well, I'm getting to senior year. I need to find some kind of service I can get involved in. Like, that's not what we're looking for. We don't want insincere commitment. We don't want students adding things to their kind of college resume to try to impress us. What we want is authenticity. And you'll hear me use that word a lot. We want students who are just their authentic selves, who are displaying to us and sharing with us in the application what they care about, and the fact that they're willing to commit time to whatever that thing or those things might be. So as you go through this year, certainly continue to stay engaged in the things that you love and the things that you care about, and enjoy the high school experience. You're allowed to do that. Not everything is about getting into the right college. Do things that help you to grow as an individual, and that's going to help you at whatever college you might choose to enroll in. And I think I'll mention here, and this is something that will probably come up in other areas. We recognize right now the impact that COVID has had on both the academic and extracurricular experience that students have or might be challenged to have right now. when this pandemic hit and many colleges and high schools moved to remote learning, we recognize that wasn't an easy transition for you as a student, for your teachers, for your parents, for colleges and universities. We're all in this. We're all impacted by it. And it's something that I think when you think forward to the time that you will apply for admission, understand that the college admission offices will recognize just the impact that all of this has had, especially around this time where you're not doing the things that you're able to normally do. You're not able to engage in the activities you could typically, you typically engage in. Your classes are online. We know that that's challenging in a transition. You know, we get all that and we recognize it and we know the impact that that's having on students. So don't worry about that. That's one of those things that you can't control. Like, you know, just take care of yourself. Focus on your own mental health. Focus on your own sense of well-being. Enjoy this time that you might have with your family. And know that when it comes time to apply to college, colleges and universities are going to be very understanding and accommodating of the fact that, you know, students are not able to be active in the way that they typically would be in their high school experience because of all the limitations and safety precautions that are in place right now. So know that we know that and know that that's something that that we'll be considering in the admission process. College essays and what we call, you know, for us at UC, personal insight questions are really insightful for us. They help us to get to know you and hear your voice in the application. And this is where I'll certainly put my UC and UCLA hat on for a second and say, this is especially true in the UC application process. When it comes time for you to write these essays and answer, we have 8 personal insight questions and you're asked to respond to 4 of them. Know that that's something that helps us to get to know you. We do not collect letters of recommendation and we do not interview students. And so when it comes time to write these, I think you should be self-reflective and be authentic. We want to know who you are. We want to know who you know what you care about. We're not, you know, our goal in evaluating these is not to circle misplaced commas. You know, it's certainly we want you to write it well and be structured and tell your story in an organized way that's easy for us to digest. But I think more than anything else, we want content. You know, we want to know you. We want to feel like we understand this individual better than before we read the responses to these questions. And I think that's been true at every college or university where I've worked, but I think it's certainly something that plays an important role for us in the UC. So be thoughtful and reflective when that time comes to share some responses in the personal insight questions. Let me talk about standardized testing, because I think a lot of you are at the point where you're starting to think about this and you're maybe thinking forward to the time when you might decide whether you want to register and take the SAT or the ACT. So the University of California came out and made an announcement, this is back in May, which seems like forever ago, that we were going to be 2 years test optional, 2 years test blind, and then in the fifth year and beyond, we would have a kind of a feasibility study within UC that would determine whether the University of California felt that we could create our own kind of exam for that fifth year and beyond that might replace potentially the SAT and ACT. And so that's actively happening and will happen over the next couple of years. So in this environment, and as you've heard probably in the news, a significant number of colleges and universities are moving towards this test optional or even potentially a test blind admission process. And the difference between those is test optional means the student has the choice to decide whether or not they would like to submit standardized test scores in an application. Test blind means you don't have the choice. The college has said we are not going to consider standardized testing in our review or selection process. So we are test optional right now. There has been a lawsuit against UC that is trying to preclude in consideration of standardized testing in our admission process beginning for this cycle. 2 years from now, we'd be test blind anyway, but this court case is to potentially force UC to be in a test blind environment prior to that 2 years ahead, 2 years from now. So that's currently still being discussed in the court, and legal counsel is still pursuing that case on behalf of UC. So as it sits today, we're a test optional institution. Could we be test blind? Potentially. That might happen, but it might not. And if that's the case, then we would be test optional for this year, and we would likely be test optional for next year when many of you would apply. But here's what I want you to hear clearly from me as far as test optional goes. Optional means optional. And this is something that we have said as a campus, we have said even as a system previously, and then a number of colleges and universities have signed off on this kind of national document produced by our professional association to say that optional means optional. And the reason why we're reinforcing that point is because we want you to hear clearly from us that you will be at absolutely no disadvantage in our admission process if you choose to not submit standardized test scores. And I'm saying that right now because in our current environment, where we sit at this moment, access to standardized testing is extremely challenging. Students are literally flying to other states and having to drive long distances to be able to take an SAT or an ACT. And what we have said clearly on our website and what I'm saying to you now is your safety is more important to us than a test score. So if you choose to take an exam and then ultimately you feel like that score represents your academic abilities at the level that you want us to see, then currently you have the option to potentially submit that score next year. But if you don't want to take the exam, if you don't feel safe taking the exam, if you feel like, well, testing's never been my thing, so I'm just not going to take it, that is okay. You are not going to be disadvantaged in our process in any way, shape, or form. Not for scholarships, not for admission. It's not going to have any impact on your admission decision if you choose not to submit standardized test scores. And so I think as you approach this process and when you get closer to the time when you're applying, I would say this is where you talk to your counselors and read the landscape and understand for the places where you're thinking about applying, what role will standardized testing potentially play in that process or not, to understand whether it's something that you think you need to consider and take, or whether you can just say, you know what, I'm not even gonna take the time and put myself at risk of taking the exam in a big room full of a bunch of other people in surgical masks and that type of thing. Like I get it, and I understand that students would feel some trepidation at entering into one of those facilities right now. So that's what I'll say about testing. Certainly happy to talk a little bit more about that if people have questions. The last couple of things that I'll say, and we can move towards some Q&A here in a minute, and it's really to respond to some questions that I've been receiving of late. One of the questions I've been getting commonly is related to gap years. And I think there's a lot of questions around whether students who have either this year or next year may request a gap year and what impact that might have on the subsequent class of students that are applying for admission. So, like, for example, if we granted deferrals this year, does that mean we're going to take fewer students next year because there's that group of students that have deferred to the following year? The answer is absolutely not. It will have zero impact. So we as a campus generally do not grant gap years. We do in rare cases, in rare exceptional cases where maybe a student has a military commitment, a religious commitment of some kind. Or in the case this year, heaven forbid, if they've really been directly impacted by COVID, either the student or their family has been impacted by the virus, maybe somebody's contracted it, somebody might have lost a job or lost wages. We certainly understand that, and that's something where we have granted some rare cases of being able to defer admission. But we've not granted deferrals based on students who just said, I'd really prefer not to be in an online environment. That's where we are. And I think colleges and universities, for the most part, a lot across the country, are engaged in virtual learning for this academic year, most likely, certainly for the fall, but likely for the entire academic year. So we've not granted deferrals in those cases. But if I broaden out to a little bit of a broader perspective, and I've been on a number of these kinds of programs and panels with colleagues from other places, I haven't heard any person say that the number of deferrals this year are going to have any significant detrimental impact on class next year. It may be that, and I'm making these numbers up, but it may be a school that has a class of 500. Maybe in a typical year, they might grant 15 or 20 gap year or deferrals. Maybe this year they granted 30. That's not going to have a significant impact on next year's class. So what I would say in a broader sense along those lines is that's not something that you can control. And that's not something that I want you to be concerned about. Because I think colleges each year want to make decisions that allow us to approach our admission process from one year to the next with a clean slate, to understand that whatever happened last year is not going to have any negative impact on the students that are applying for admission this year. That's certainly the case at my campus. I can tell you that what we're doing for fall 2021 isn't going to have anything to do with what happened in the class of fall of 2020. We're starting new, we're starting fresh, and what happened with last year's class isn't going to have any impact on what we're doing for the upcoming class this year. The last couple of things I'll say, and then like I said, we'll open it up to some questions. I think you all are in a very fortunate and supportive situation as far as where you go to school and the counselors that you have access to. Trust them. Trust the support they give you. Trust the knowledge that they have. Trust their perspective, because I think they come at this from a place that is unique. And that is, they probably know you better than any college or university is going to know you. They understand your work, they understand their environment, and they understand colleges and universities. So they're going to be best equipped to give you the kind of advice to determine places that might be a good fit. And as they give that advice, trust what they're saying to you. Because we talk to these folks all the time, me and my colleagues at UC and other private colleges and universities interact with these folks all the time. And we're trying to get to know each other. We're trying to get to know the schools. They're trying to get to know us. And all of that is to the benefit of the student, to understand who are the students that might be applying to our institutions and might be potentially a good fit. The last thing I'll say is really to the parents, and this is just kind of a message to you all. I know it feels like sometimes that your students may not listen to you. I've got a 13-year-old and I think he barely listens to me. So I understand that there are times when it may seem like they're tuning you out. But as you begin to really enter into this process, what I would encourage you to remember is, number one, even if it seems like they're not listening, they are. If you're anxious and nervous about this process, and if you're pushing this idea that it's these one or two colleges are bust, they're going to internalize that. They're going to carry that pressure around with them. And I think, one of the things you probably have realized, and I realize even myself over these past several months, is this time is precious. The time that you have with your students over the next couple of years, once they go to college, that may be the last time they live in your house. That may be the last time that you have the kind of day-to-day interactions that you do now. So make that time, something that's really enjoyable and special. If you're going to have conversations about college, limit that time. Don't let it completely dominate the conversations at home. A colleague of mine gave the advice that, when he and his family went through the process, it was like, all right, Thursdays are college talk Thursdays. That's when we're going to talk about college. The rest of the week is my time, and I got to breathe, and I'm not trying to talk about college all the time. So find whatever that mechanism looks like for you. Find that time and allow yourselves to really enjoy, being in each other's space for as long as you can. And you're really the emotional barometer for them in this process. They're going to key off whatever energy you're bringing to this. So let them steer the ship. Let them be out in front. Let them make those phone calls. Let them send those emails. let them kind of arrange these virtual engagement things. They can do it. You know, once they're on a college campus, I can promise you, you're not going to be there to help them, and the faculty aren't going to let you know when they stumble or want to hear from you as to why they stumbled. They're going to expect the student to advocate for themselves and be able to do these things on their own without anybody to support them. So give them that emotional support, you know, be behind them, let them know you're proud of them. And this process is really going to be enjoyable, heaven forbid. So with that, I'm going to pause. I'm going to let Lauren and her colleagues come back, and we'll maybe move to some questions that maybe I can answer for you.
I'm just going to come on as the voice. Well, maybe I'll turn on my camera. thank you, Gary. That was amazing. And I think particularly that last message of that as a student, you pick up on your parent or guardian's energy. As a parent or guardian, keeping that in check is so important, and recognizing that open-mindedness is really your best ticket. So thank you. For those of you who would like to put questions in the chat, you're welcome to. We don't have the actual Q&A feature tonight, but you can just put them in and we'll sift through. I have one or two questions that I would love to kick off with, and then we can go to the chat questions. And if you've already put something in, we see it, we'll get to it. If we miss it, feel free to come back at us. So thank you, Gary, again.
Sure.
And the question that I would pose initially, and then I'm going to turn off my camera and I'll just become, well, Elizabeth and Andy and I will just become voices in the sky. Not really, that we're not that cool, but, you know, ambient voices, would be, you know, if there's, for the students particularly, if there's anything that you would recommend that students at the beginning of their junior year kind of think about or take in or reflect on or do, is there something you would recommend kind of focusing on to kind of stay the course in the next couple of weeks and months and years?
Yeah, you know, I think really I want it to be something that whatever you commit your time to, I want the motive for that to be because you really care about it. You know, and I think colleges, and I've worked at other places and I know a lot of folks in this field, like what we want is genuine, authentic students who share their story with us in the admission process. So what I would say, and as that guides students, you know, as that might guide students in the beginning of their junior year, is to, if you have things that you love and you know what those things are, then just continue to pour yourself into those things. If you're still searching, which is many of us are, you know, at a variety of ages, then just enjoy the process of searching for the thing that really, really gets you excited and resonates with you. Don't worry about where it fits in a college box, because, you know, students in all shapes and sizes with all types of experiences go through this process and land at a college or university that is exactly the right place for them. So don't feel like the decisions you make are of these immensely consequential nature that, well, if I don't do this or I do this, I've set my course for life. That's not the case. That's not how it works. That's not the reality. So enjoy yourself. Like, you know, I think the one thing I think has happened a lot, and this is, I'm not that old, but I'm old enough, I think, to say this, that it feels like sometimes the idea is high school is all about getting into the right college. And college is all about getting into the right law school or medical school or MBA program. And you wind up, I think, getting to this point when you're in your late 20s or early 30s, and we've got this generations of students who are like, when did I have fun? Like, when was I a teenager? When did I do things because they were just fun to do, not because I thought a college might be looking for them? So allow the joy of what you do to be motivation enough for why you choose to do something. Don't feel like everything has to be connected to a college choice in some way.
Cool, that's great. Do you have another question we had, and then I'll go to some of the chat questions, and please feel free to put questions in the chat, would be, is there anything you recommend reading or watching or not reading or listening to or not listening to right now, in terms of there's just so much noise around all of this?
Yeah, no, I mean, that's a great question, Lauren, because I think there's the volume. And for any of you parents who went to college yourselves, and certainly for those folks on the college counseling staff, like the amount of information you have access to now compared to when many of us went through the college process is just, you know, a mountain versus a molehill. I mean, it's just a huge difference in the amount of information you have access to. The challenge is, that can be good in some ways, but the challenge is it credible information? Because I can't tell you how many articles and headlines are written in a way to get you to click on that article or to get you to buy that book. You know, everybody is giving you the inside scoop. Everybody is saying, well, you know, I talked to 5 college admission officers and this is how things really work. And I think a lot of that is really just to, you know, fear sells. You know, making people nervous and anxious is a way to motivate spending. And so what I would say is stay grounded. You know, talk to your counselors about things that they might recommend. Like one of the ones I talk about, and I actually talked about this earlier today, is Colleges That Change Lives. Like this is one of those publications that's trying to broaden the colleges that you might think of in the search process to really think about these creative places that approach education in these different and unique kinds of ways. So I would say just be mindful of the sources from which you consume information. You know, I think, you know, one of the pieces of advice I always give is be wary of the gospel according to the neighbor. You know, there are lots of folks who maybe have had a child who's gone through this process, and then they feel as though they're in a position to tell you how it's going to work for your son or daughter. And, you know, don't fall into that trap because, you know, I've been doing this a long time and read applications for many years. And, you know, I couldn't tell you based on you telling me a handful of things whether a student's going to be admitted to UCLA or not. So if I can't tell you, then certainly nobody else can. You know, so I think just be careful. Everybody wants to give you advice. Everybody has an opinion. You know, the last thing I do on an airplane back when we used to fly is to generally tell people what I do, because even if they're not engaged in the process, they're going to have questions and thoughts about the college search process. So, you know, trust your counselors. There are certainly some great resources out there, but don't click on everything that has college in the title or subject line, because a lot of folks are just looking to prey on your anxiety around this.
So I'll start off with just one of the, actually, I'm going to turn off my camera and then I'll just say the question. So one of the questions I'm seeing is there are a couple addressing the idea of test optional and whether that going test optional doesn't create an ecosystem in which only the very highest scores submit scores. And then the question is, where is that line, or how do you determine whether your scores are appropriate to be sending? Because aren't you just kind of skimming off everybody else? And sort of an adjacent question is, when you say test optional, if it doesn't have any bearing on admission decisions, but you're looking in context, you're assuming that a student from a strong, you know, school such as Urban, shouldn't they all have high test scores? And what would be, so I will let you address, I have my own answer to that second part, but I'll let you address that one too.
Sure. So no, I think it's a good question about test optional. I think this is, you know, test optional isn't a new thing. Test optional has been around for a long time, and there are lots of colleges that have been doing this for longer than just around, you know, the pandemic happening. You know, Bowdoin's been doing it forever, and Bates has been Bowdoin doesn't even want your test scores, and Bates has been test optional forever. So certainly I think there are lots of schools that have been doing this in a robust way for a long time. But I think you're absolutely right in the sense that, you know, and this is one of the challenges of optional, is that generally the students who choose to submit scores are going to be the students who've performed well. So, you know, students who don't perform well for whatever reason or choose not to take the exam aren't going to submit their scores. But what I don't want you to do is think that we're trying to reverse engineer that decision. We're not assuming that if a student doesn't submit their score, that it's because they had a low score. You know, I think when a college reads an application, you have to think about the whole bandwidth of information that they're considering and how robust that information is. You know, you heard me talk about, you know, curriculum and rigor and you know, and grades and essays and leadership and involvement outside of class and all these things that play into an admission decision. And I think there's this idea that the real fulcrum point of a decision historically for colleges has been that test score. And I will tell you, it hasn't been. I mean, I honestly, and I would tell you if it were the case, like, I can't recall a single time when we were evaluating applications and we're making decisions between a student or two students saying, well, but you know, this one's got 20 points higher on the SAT. Like it's not something that played that role in the process. It was something that often, more often than not, validated other parts of the application that we might have seen. And so I think colleges feel comfortable moving forward in an environment where we might not have a test score because we feel like we've got plenty of other information to evaluate the student and make an admission decision. So test optional simply provides a student with that option of saying, look, if you feel like it's something that really represents your academic abilities well, then feel free to submit that score. All we're gonna do is focus on what you did and evaluate that information within the context of your environment. And to the point of the school, you know, again, I think what we're understanding is the context of your academic performance in that school. But test scores take on a whole other layer of complexity in terms of who traditionally performs well on those exams, you know, access to support for taking those exams. You know, we understand where students live versus where they go to school. We understand the discrepancies in testing, you know, based on students from different groups or low income or first gen or that kind of thing. So everything that we do in evaluating an application is done through the lens of trying to understand the student, their situation, their access to opportunities, and the degree to which they've taken advantage of them. So if and when you choose not to submit those scores, know that that's not something that's going to be detrimental to your application at all.
Thank you, Elizabeth here, Gary. I have two questions. The first addressing that the possibility that a percentage of this year senior class would wait 1 year to apply to colleges and if that could possibly impact admission rates in 2022.
I don't think so. I mean, look, our applications, when I started at UCLA, and granted this has been 8 years ago, we had, I think that year, 75,000 applications and we're up to almost 110,000. So applications traditionally are going up anyway. And to be honest, at colleges and universities, traditionally, when they move towards test optional and test blind, they tend to get more applications. So the volume increase probably isn't going to have anything to do with students who are taking a gap year or delaying applying as a result of COVID. And I think, to be honest, especially in terms of what we've seen and even what we experienced at my university this year, the number of deferral requests versus last year was only slightly higher. And the number of deferrals that we granted overall was in the double digits. And this is on an incoming freshman class of probably 6,400 students. The number of students who deferred, you know, like I said, is in the double digits. So I wouldn't worry about that. You know, I think colleges that are highly selective are going to continue to be highly selective. And it's not going to have anything to do with whether students have taken a gap year or not. So like I said, don't let that impact your decision. I think, you know, that's something that if you feel like a gap year is appropriate for you and you want to take a year before you apply to college, then you should do that. And know that even without COVID or even with not students, you know, deferring or that type of thing, you know, colleges traditionally tend to slightly inch up in applications each year, but that doesn't have anything to do with the fact that students are taking gap year. So I wouldn't worry about that.
Thank you. Another question about just the ways in which students can get a good feel for a college campus or meaningfully engage given the limitations right now with COVID.
Yeah. So I think there are limitations, but as I said, I think there are also opportunities. You know, so yes, and every college or university would say this, like we want you on our campus. We wish we could welcome you to our campus, have one of our students walk you around, give you a chance to engage with students, ask questions in person, maybe sit in on a class. Like we all want that experience for you as a prospective student because, and this has been true everywhere I've been, there's nothing that is more likely to increase a student's chance of enrolling if they're admitted than the experience of being on campus. So we want you on our campuses, but that's not possible right now. But what you can do is really take advantage of these opportunities to engage virtually. There might be places that you're considering that you otherwise would not have gotten on an airplane and flown there to visit. A place that you're like, well, I thought about it, but I don't know. All it costs you is some time and an hour or something like that to do a virtual presentation at any college or university across the country, to take either a live virtual tour or maybe watch a video or maybe sit in on a class, you know, virtually. Or like, there are a lot of ways to really engage with colleges now that weren't even available to you 6 months ago. So I would say, don't think about this as a time when you can't do things. Focus on the things that you can do and take advantage of the opportunities to get to know maybe a broader range of schools than you might have if you were just focusing on that traditional, like, you know, drive somewhere or get on an airplane and fly somewhere type of visit. So take advantage of the opportunities that you have now. Colleges have really invested in kind of that virtual engagement in a way that we really, really never had previously.
I have a few questions stacked up that I think might be interesting, all very different. One is just, can you speak just briefly to the 2 to 4 year transfer programs in California and what those look like, either from UCLA or more broadly?
No, absolutely. I'm glad somebody asked that. So just so you know, for the University of California, and this is true at my campus and all the campuses within UC, we are committed to what's called a 2-to-1 ratio. And what that means is we enroll one new transfer student for every two new freshmen. So when I said that we're enrolling this year a class of 6,400 students, we're also enrolling about 3,600 or 3,700 transfer students this year as well. And that number, while the numbers might change, the ratio stays the same every year. Probably 93% of those transfer students come from California community colleges. So we are squarely committed to supporting students coming out of the California Community College system at the University of California. So if you're thinking about that as an option, it's a good one. I think it makes a lot of sense for many students and families to make that choice. And I think it's an affirmative decision. You know, I think, you know, there might be this idea that, well, you know, you do community college if you can't get in as a freshman. That's absolutely untrue. It's absolutely untrue. I mean, 40% of our upperclassmen at UCLA came to us as transfer students. They're highly successful. They graduate at the same rates as our incoming freshmen do. They're bright, they're capable, and they're making decisions to come through the transfer process in a way that is right for them and their family. So I would say certainly think about that, whether it's UC, Cal State, you know, both of us are really supportive of students coming through the transfer process. I will say, just as one little note related to transfer, understand that the admission process is a little bit different for transfer students. At many colleges and universities, it might be major specific. So for us in the freshman process, with exception, and this is a whole tangent that I won't go off on, but you know, for the most part, if students are applying to the College of Letters and Science at UCLA, the major they choose doesn't play a role in the admission decision. So whether they're history, undecided, business economics, doesn't have any impact on the decision. At the transfer level, everything is dependent upon the major that you apply to. You got to take major prep. You have to complete 2 years worth of work at a community college. So a little bit of a different process, but a wonderful option for students if they're thinking of that. So I would encourage you to really consider that.
I'm going to bundle two more questions that have nothing to do with one another, but hopefully if you forget them, you could call for a lifeline. The first one is just having worked at Pitzer, let's say, and then at UCLA, or you can kind of insert USC in the middle. Are there clear differences or things that you would say affirmatively are you notice as being very, very different about those two different kind of undergraduate communities? And then the second one is, if Prop 16 passes, what are the implications that you can foresee? So feel free to come back to the Prop 16 one or answer.
Sure. No, I can remember those two. So, you know, I think the certainly the experiences are different. You know, I loved Claremont. I was there for 6 years and loved Pitzer and loved the Claremont colleges. I think it's a special place. So, you know, I couldn't say more to advocate for the Claremont colleges and what they can offer to students. I think a small college experience is inherently different in many ways than a big college experience. They may share some similarities, but they're a little bit different in the sense that a small college campus, you're much more likely to know a broader group of students, the interactions, the small classes, the opportunities to engage with faculty are upfront from the beginning. At a large college, those opportunities are there, but it's a much bigger group of students, and you might be in some large lecture classes, and you need to know that out of the gate and be okay with it. And some students are perfectly fine with it, you know, and I know coming out of a small place like Urban, it might be intimidating to go to a large college, but I think what I would say is just advocating for large colleges for a moment, big colleges get that we're big. And we get that we have to help students transition into that environment, regardless of the size of their high school. Because I don't care if you go to a school with a graduating class of 50 or 400 or 600, we're bigger. And so we know we have to support students in helping to find community, helping to connect with other students, to create those opportunities to engage with faculty. That's something that I think is going to be inherent in what we do to ensure that students persist and are successful and have a great experience on our campus. I think it's, you know, I always tell students, like, if you're on a small college campus and you miss class, faculty member may come and knock on your dorm room door and say, hey, where were you today? That's unlikely to happen on my campus. You know, you've got to be somebody who's a self-starter. You've got to be somebody who's active and engaged and really will seek out opportunities to interact with other students and with faculty and to ask questions and that type of thing. If you do that, you know, we've got a range of opportunities that are second to none. I think at a small college, you're more likely to be pulled out of your shell into some of those experiences and engagement. So I think it's really just that self-reflection of knowing what appeals to me and what do I like or what do I not. You know, the cultures of colleges are different, not just based on size, but just based on mission and emphasis and focus and that type of thing. So, you know, you need to think about what are the qualities that this college or university espouses and to what degree do those really sync with the kinds of things that I really care about. In terms of Prop 16,
before you get to Prop 16, there was a bit of a clarification about it, and you can speak to this briefly or come back to it, about the how different the admission processes were versus once you're on campus. So I think your
answer is okay. Great.
But that, oh, I think, I wasn't clear on it either. So feel free to go to Prop 16 and come back to that. I'm probably going to wrap up in a sec, but take it from there.
So I'll go to that part first, and then I'll come to Prop 16. So what I would say is the similarities of admission processes at all the places where I've worked are larger in number than the differences. And I think a lot of folks would be surprised by that, but I think that's really the case. So at every place where I've worked, every application was read and every application's been read twice. And I think that's probably surprising to people. Now, the committee process and the selection process is a little bit different. You know, when I was at Pitzer, and again, long time ago, like there were six of us that read applications and sat around a table, and this was back when there were paper files, and we would spend a week and you know, douse ourselves in Girl Scout cookies and just sit and evaluate and make admission decisions as a group. There isn't a table big enough to accommodate all the people that are involved in our review process at UCLA. So what we focus on is more is understanding those evaluation steps, you know, how our readers are reading applications, how they, you know, make notes in the application and tell us what are the highlights and kind of score the application in that process. And then ultimately what we're doing, what I'm doing and my senior staff is looking at all of those notes and points that have been made by the people who've read the application and kind of building the class from the ground up. And that's been the case everywhere I've been. Like, I think there's this idea that we're looking for reasons to say no. We're actually looking for reasons to advocate for admitting students, to start from zero and build from the ground up to get to that volume of admission offers that we think we're capable of making to hit our enrollment targets. And that may sound like semantics, but it's not. It's an approach, it's a philosophy. It's looking for reasons to advocate and support, not for reasons to exclude and keep students out of the process. So moving on and shifting a little bit to Prop 16. So this is the proposition that would repeal Proposition 209, which bans consideration of race, ethnicity, gender, or national origin in an admission process. So if that were to pass, then it is possible that UC and Cal State and public institutions would be able to potentially consider those as a part of the admission process and practice generally what's considered affirmative action. So here's what I would say about that. And I want people to hear this point clearly because it's something I've always felt really strongly about. I think there's a huge misperception of affirmative action. I think there's this idea that affirmative action is intended to take less qualified students and admit them based on their race or gender or that type of thing. Not at all the case. And I've been at plenty of places that practice affirmative action. What affirmative action allows us to do is, and I describe our process this way. So let's say we have 100 students who've applied to UCLA. It's a very self-selective applicant pool. You know, we don't get a lot of bad students that apply to our institution. They're strong students. They're very capable. I would say to the point where 50 to 60 of the students that are out of those 100 that apply could easily come to UCLA and do the work. No problem. Very capable, have done great work. Faculty would love them. Like, it, you know, they are capable of coming to our institution, being successful, and contributing to the intellectual community on campus. We admit this past year, like last year, 12%, this year, about a 14% admit rate. What affirmative action would allow us to do is within that group of very compelling, highly qualified 50 to 60 students who we know are capable of coming to our institution and doing the work, we would be able to say, as an institution, we are looking for a community that features all of these kinds of things. Students who are leaders, students who are active, students who are engaged, a diverse student body. We want to see more women in STEM. We'd like to see more underrepresented students. Like, it allows a campus community to say, these are the things that represent us as an institution, and we are going to act affirmatively on behalf of those qualities and characteristics to bring in a class that really reflects those values. It's not taking students who aren't qualified and propelling them to admission based on that characteristic. It's saying, within this highly qualified group, what are the things that we're looking for to really build our class of 6,400 plus students in an incoming class? 10,000 plus considering transfers.
That's pretty much every question. I think we got to everything. If someone didn't have a chance to ask a question, I'm sure, I don't want to promise for you, that Gary would, if we pass it along, he would be happy to answer by email. But I just want to thank you again for showing up tonight, even when all of your athletic events were on. For the students who hung in there and listened, I promise you this was time well spent. So thank you again. Have a great night. And we really appreciate it. Please also, for those adults who are in the room still, next week we will have a junior coffee. You can come ask questions. It's totally optional. We don't give any need to know information, but it's just a chance to check in and kind of get a beat with our office. So that's in the parent news, but we will see you all soon, I hope, and have a good night. And thank you so much, Gary, again.
Absolutely. Have a good night. Thanks.